You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Aurora and Don Bluth Productions present a classic adventure in motion picture entertainment.
I must tell you about Nim. Look there.
It's a fantasy with wizards and villains. And heroes.
I ain't scared of nothing. I'm not even afraid of the great owl.
Will you hush up?
Come on.
It's an odyssey to another world. A world of fantasy and enchantment.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Retrospective. I am your host, Kale Smith. Joining me today is Wes Walker.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
And today we are going to be discussing and celebrating the 35th anniversary of The Secrets of Nim. Now, The Secrets of Nim came out on, I'm trying to get back up to the Wikipedia.
1982.
Well, that, but also, I was going to be more specific, July 2nd, 1982. So it was released on the 4th of July weekend on limited release and then ultimately expanded throughout the country throughout the rest of the summer. And it was faced with stiff competition, again, from E.T. being just dominating from everything. As you probably know, or probably getting sick of, you're probably getting sick of tiring me, like, saying in the summer of 1982, E.T. just dominated everything. But it really did. It's incredible. So, with that said, the production history of it is, of course, this was the first, like, independent Don Bluth production he did. He worked on some stuff with Disney. He was the animation director on Pete's Dragon, and also worked through the years as an animation supervisor for a lot of movies through the 60s and 70s, like Sword in the Stone, and he did some work for Mrs. Poppins. Not, is that right?
Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins. Anyway, so going on to this movie, what was interesting about finding out the production history of this movie, Wes, was that they turned him down to do this movie because he had this idea of adapting The Secrets of Nim to animation. And the problem was Disney said, we already have a mouse. He's called Mickey Mouse. And we've already made a mouse movie called The Rescuers. So there was like, so for them, it was like, we've already done this kind of movie before, or we've already done movies with mice. So we can't really do The Secrets of Nim. So he did this movie on his own and got funding through United Artists. And while this movie was critically praised a lot, I think Roger Ebert gave it like 3 out of 4 stars. It still didn't do well until home video and re-releases and all that. So it had to kind of like get away from the E.T. juggernaut in order to find its life. And we'll get into in later on the podcast about the rest of Don Bluth's movies, particularly American Tail and Land Before Time and All Dogs Go to Heaven. But for this point, Wes, what did you think of The Secrets of Nim?
Well, as you know, Kel, I'm a lot older than you, so I grew up in the 90s, and being a 90s kid, you know, a lot of these movies were put on VHS. So, and that, as you said, this movie really didn't get popular until it got a VHS release, which probably was in the late 80s. So,
yeah, mid to late 80s.
Yeah. So this movie right here, I remember this movie was really popular in the early 90s. I remember watching this as a child. I think I watched it in 1993, 94 on VHS. And one thing I really liked about the movie was the animation. I liked the dark tone they went with. You know, I read the book as a child. The original book is called Miss Frisbee, and the secret, the Rats of Nim.
Right.
So it's like a, you know, they kind of draw, from what I understand, they dropped the name because they didn't want to be associated with the word Frisbee because it's trademarked, kind of weird.
Right.
So, but there's some elements of the book that I wish they would have kept. In the book, there was no magical element to it, like Nicodemus. He was never
Nicodemus.
He was never magic in the book. In the book, he was actually on the same level as all the other mice and rats. It was technically a science fiction book. It had no fantasy element to it. So I guess Don Bluth decided to add the fantasy element to it in the movie, just to make it more appealing to children, I guess.
Yeah, because I mean, even in the movie, as I was watching it today, Nicodemus is a wizard. But the rest of the movie, it's all like, it's all explained, like why the rats can talk or how they're like, they can think for themselves and how they became intelligent. So for him to be a wizard and the amulet that Miss Brisby has, and for that to be magic at the end, it's kind of like, well, wait a second. So how does this fit into all this science? Because really, it's basically Rise of the Planet of the Apes before that movie, even 30 years before that movie came out, essentially.
Yeah, but you know, Planet of the Apes came out way before this movie.
Oh, sure, but
1968 is when the movie came out, and the book was written in 1963.
Oh, sure, but I don't think during those sequels that were in those movies, they mentioned like apes were brought up by medicine and science.
Well, the not to get off topic here, but you know, the Planet of the Apes, the whole book originally was supposed to be a satire on humanity, originally, mm-hmm. and when it got adapted into a movie, you know, that obviously changed, you know, but it's the same. I can even say the same thing with the book. The book is just a social commentary on humanity's influence on nature. Specifically, I think that was the whole idea behind the book originally, because you know, in the book, you know, you don't see a whole lot, because you know, you gotta imagine what's going on in the book. But in the book, they basically talk about how these rats were experimented on over at that mental institute, and when they were experimented on, they basically gained higher intelligence, because originally what they were experimenting on is they were trying to figure out how to cure Alzheimer's and dementia and stuff
right.
like that. So it increased their, you know, their mental capacity, which, you know, like you said, Rise of the Planet of the Apes is the
kind of took that plot device,
because in the original Planet of the Apes, that wasn't the plot device at all. The plot device was humans started enslaving apes, and apes eventually started gaining intelligence by watching and imitating humans. That was the original plot behind the original.
It was a natural evolution.
Yeah, basically, but it was accelerated because we were. It's kind of like when you take dogs, you know, dogs are smarter than wolves because we've domesticated them and their intelligence has grown with us. It's the same type of thing when they try to domesticate apes in the original Planet of the Apes movies.
Right.
Just to make a comparison.
Of course.
But as far as Secret of the Nim, though, the magical element of the movie is where I feel like they kind of messed up a little bit. In my opinion, I feel like it would have been better if they would have followed the book a little bit more. But it's easy to let go because it really is such a good movie, because Don Bluth is a really good filmmaker, in my opinion.
He's a good storyteller, and the thing is, I really do like this movie a lot. Like, it is a very, like, you feel for Mrs. Brisby as she is, like, a single mother who is just trying to make it through the world without her husband. You know, she's struggling, especially in a, you know, in an age where Don Bluth is kind of commenting on, like, you know, how single life is complicated for, like, single mother life is complicated, mm-hmm. especially if you're the widow of someone, you know, in fighting a war. And that's kind of, you can kind of make a parallel to that. Like, she, you know, her husband, like, went off to go and fight, for the rats,
mm-hmm.
who are fighting for their own, like, freedom and mm-hmm. to, you know, for their own protection. And he is lost in the battle of it, I think they were trying to drug dragon. But it is a really good story. There are some things that I don't really. There were some things that could have been eased out. Like, I don't know how Jeremy, the Don DeLuise's character, I don't know why he was necessary to the plot. that much.
He wasn't really big in the book. Just putting that out there. I think they just added him for more of a comic relief type character. Because like I said, it's for adults too, but it's mostly for kids.
Oh yeah. And I mean, I don't know any kids that'll relate to single mother problems, but it's still like, it's like early Don Bluth. Like, I feel like when we get to American Tail, when you get to American Tail and Land Before Time, it's like where he's perfected his storytelling and his craft, and he's at the height of his storytelling ability. But Secrets of Nim, it is a really good story, and it is like it does have like the subtext of like how nature is kind of reflecting us. And of course, it's at the time of where we're trying to push science further.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, I really did like the movie. It's a really good movie. I do wish the magic was either cut out or elaborated even more, because it does Ex Machina at the end of the movie, where the amulet like rises Mrs. Brisby's home and moves it. It's not very explained very well.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I thought it was really well done, and it was a really well done movie. Very short, very quick to the pace, much like most animated movies were anyway. So overall, I really liked it. So with that said, let's talk a little bit more about Don Bluth as his career progressed.
Mm-hmm.
So after Secrets of Nim, he attracted the attention of Amblin and Steven Spielberg. And together they made, with Universal, American Tail and Land Before Time. Do you remember any of those movies at all?
Yeah, I was actually introduced to both of those movies before Secret of the Nim,
mm-hmm.
originally. In my opinion, I think Land Before Time is probably his best movie. It's a very depressing movie. Like, I would always advertise people, if you go in watching Land Before Time, please be prepared to be really depressed, because it's very dark movie. And I'm just going to go ahead and say this right now. Fuck every one of those shitty like sequels. Those are awful.
I think I quit after. Where was the one? Which one was the one that Keith or Sutherland was in, playing Littlefoot's dad?
I don't even remember. It just doing that. It kind of just defeats the whole purpose of the movie, you know?
Because mm-hmm.
they're musicals, and the tone. You can even tell the animation is different. Like the animation Land Before Time, the original one, is really dark, but the animation in these, like,
it's
musicals,
lighter.
It's lighter. It's like, you know, I can't get behind that. Even as a child, I could never get behind it, you know?
I could, you know, I was like 5 or 6 when I watched those. So, I got it. But it's like, obviously I've not watched them like since. I think the last time I watched them was like during like when Blockbuster was still huge.
That makes sense.
So whenever that kind of ended, that's kind of when I stopped watching the Land Before Time movies. So, and as far as American Tail goes, I saw the movie as a kid, but I think I've seen the sequel more on Cartoon Network than anything.
It's easily the original, you know, American Tail movie is like the most easily recognizable film, because there's a certain song in the movie.
Yeah.
That one is like so easily recognizable by people. That's why a lot of people, when people say Don Bluth, they either say Land Before Time, or they say, you know, another one is All Dogs Go to Heaven. That's another one that, you know,
that's one of my favorites.
Easily associated with him.
That's one of my favorites, because, and that was the one where I really got into like Don Bluth a lot, because it was, that movie is a lot of fun. Like it's
terror,
very adult.
It's very scary too. There's some really fucking, like, as a kid, some of those scenes really scared the shit out of me, I'm gonna be honest.
Oh yeah, and I mean the movie ends with Charlie going to hell, and then, well, he goes to hell, and then is like, his soul is saved because of the little girl, his actions towards the little girl.
Well, because he goes through a journey, you know. He was a thug, you know, and then he goes from being a thug to being, you know, a better person, you know,
mm-hmm. through this kid.
Yeah,
That's always the thing in Don Bluth movies, is that there's always that one element where it doesn't make sense, where like the kid who just conveniently can talk to animals. There's always that one little thing that just like, well, wait a minute, how does this work? But then again, it's just a plot thing. But I really liked the movie, and I liked that character of Charlie, and I've seen the other two movies.
Well, the thing is with his movies, it seems like he makes these really awesome movies, and then they end up making really shitty sequels to them. The only one that I've ever seen that really had a decent sequel was American Tail, Five Will Goes West. Mm-hmm. I actually really liked that sequel.
And it was on a Cartoon Network a lot.
Yeah, because though that one got a theatrical release too, along with the first one. But they made a third movie that went straight to VHS, and it was really bad.
I don't remember that one as much.
Nah, I don't even remember the name of it. It was that bad. That happens a lot with his movies. Like I said, like Secret of Nim, like it got
sequelized too.
It got sequelized too. Yeah, and that one was really bad. It was Timmy to the Rescue, something like that, and it was really bad. I remember that airing on Cartoon Network, and I remember they advertised the hell out of it, and then I remember watching it, and I'm like, this sucks. Even as a child, you know, you can just tell that this is going to be bad. But, you know, he's made bad movies over the years, too. Like, Rockadoodle is a shitty movie. I don't care what anybody says.
I think I did see that on Cartoon Network one time, and I don't remember any of it.
Oh, that. Well, there's a reason for that. But there were some pretty funny scenes in there that were so bad that they were funny. Like, the owls in that movie are so, ridiculous. They sing stupid songs, and
oh god,
yeah, it's pretty rough to watch. And the character, the main character, the little cat boy, oh god, he's annoying. And Rockadoodle gets like shafted by the sun. The sun decides not to come up one day when he doesn't like crow to it. It's just
that's weird,
kind of a weird plot. And A Troll in Central Park is another one, and it was a bad movie too. Like it was not
yeah,
very good.
It seemed like Don Bluth, like when he left Spielberg. I mean, he did one more movie with United Artists, mm-hmm. and that was All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And but when he like made a deal with Fox, it kind of just went downhill. Because I don't actually remember seeing Anastasia. Do you remember?
Yeah, Anastasia actually had a really, really good plot to it. I remember as a kid, I actually liked it. I saw it in theaters actually because. Mm-hmm. It came out in theaters when I was about 9 years old, and my mother took me and my sister to go watch it. And I remember, man, I remember that it, like the villain was really cool, and it was a very popular movie for like 2 years after that. Like the little bat guy, I forget his name, but he was like very popular, and they had like a tie-in with Fox Kids because I watched Fox Kids as a child,
right? Because it was Saturday morning cartoons,
yeah.
Right?
So that character was. Got his own show on Fox Kids, so that's how popular that shit was. Like it obviously did pretty well. And the last movie that he made was Titan A.E., and that movie bombed at the box office, despite being a pretty interesting film.
Okay, because I don't think I saw that movie either. Even though it is like, it wasn't it like co-written by Joss Whedon?
I believe so. It's a science fiction film about these aliens that don't. Trust humans, and they feel really what's the word I'm looking for, threatened by humans, so they decide to go out an all-out war and just basically wipe out humanity. And the whole plot behind it is Titan AE is a backup plan that the main character's father came up with to bring back the planet Earth and bring back humanity. It's basically like a giant spaceship that seeds a planet, or I think it creates a planet. I don't know, I haven't seen it in a very long time. But the creatures that they go up and get destroyed, the humans get destroyed by, are these energy beings, basically.
So. Cool. I really should, because that actually all sounds actually kind of cool mm-hmm. to me.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I have not checked out Anastasia. I mean, I recognize it. Like, I remember as a kid, like, seeing posters everywhere and seeing advertisements. I don't remember the show you're talking about. But that might be because I watched WB Saturday morning cartoons instead. Like I watched The Mummy and The Godzilla and all that. So
yeah, that's when I was in middle school. So like that's like because they got rid of Fox Kids in 2001. That's when it kind of went off the air completely.
Mm-hmm.
But Fox Kids started in the mid 80s and ran all the way to 2001, and that was kind of my whole childhood because that's where. The X-Men were, and it's where Spider-Man was, Iron Man, mm-hmm. all these different cartoons. Because, you know, Fox owned Marvel in the 90s for a long time. you know, own the rights to a lot of these different things, and you know
right. And yeah. now they own X-Men, and now they own the X-Men and the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, pretty much.
We'll see about New Mutants, and we'll see about New Mutants in that Dark Phoenix movie. We'll see
how that goes.
We'll see about that Doctor Doom movie. So anyway, let's backtrack to Secrets of NIMH. So you didn't see the sequels, right? Because I didn't see it. I saw the
sequel on Cartoon Network, and it was really bad. There was a lot of hype for it as when I was a kid, and I watched it, and I wasn't really that impressed with it. It was a different tone. Timmy, the kid that gets sick in the first one, he's grown up, and he has to go save his brother.
And okay.
And he goes to save his brother, and his brother's like a monster because he's been experimented on so much. He gets experimented on.
Martin has become the Will Wheaton character.
Yeah, so Martin becomes like this really powerful being after being experimented on so much. And I think by the end of the movie, Martin gets his I don't want to say his humanity, but his ratness back, or his you know, like he becomes like normal again, I guess you could say. So.
Oh, that doesn't sound, because that actually is disappointing, because Miss Brisby, the character, she's actually a very interesting character. And, I mean, she's active. Like, she's not like a reaction.
She was barely in the sequel at all.
That is disappointing.
Mm-hmm. You see her in the beginning, and then Timmy pretty much takes the torch and runs with it.
So they made a sequel of the sick kid. The kid that was basically the reason why this whole movie started. Or the first one started, and they were like, "Yeah, let's make him the lead."
Well, it's kind of like Fern Gully. They did the same thing with Fern Gully. Fern Gully, the first one was really good, but then they made a sequel, and the sequel was fucking terrible. Same kind of situation.
Oh, isn't that the problem with animated movies, especially from the 80s, is that they just have like really bad sequels?
Well, it's just how, I mean, it's as Hollywood always is, man. You know, if they think they can make money off of it, they'll do it. It's like, the first Aladdin movie was really good, you know, and I even liked Return of Jafar, but then, you know, Aladdin and the Prince of Thieves, like, I think it was a little bit too much, you know?
Yeah, and that was the one where they actually got, like, Robin Williams to come back.
Yes, they did. They got Robin Williams to come back. Although, I think, I'm a huge fan of what's his name?
The Homer Simpson guy?
Yeah, Dan Castellaneta. Was it?
I can't pronounce it.
Costalella?
Maybe, yeah. That's probably
close. Well, he's a great voice actor. He's voiced a lot of characters over the years, and I really do like him as a genie too. So it's like they're both good, you know, in my opinion.
Okay. So going back to the Secrets of NIMH, it's a really good movie, but I do feel like Don Bluth is still like finding his own path. And you see in American Tale that, you know, you see him finally, like, because one of the things that I actually found in Roger Ebert's review for this movie is that he felt like, and I sort of agreed, there's not a character kids can grapple onto.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because he worked with Spielberg, he actually like got, because the rest of his movies are about adults, like, or the characters are in their adult age. Like, I mean, Charlie in All Dogs Go to Heaven, like, he's an adult. I feel like the combination of Don Bluth and Spielberg like kind of forced them to like, well, let's make these movies for children, and people can relate to. And I think there are children out there that could relate to, you know, being an immigrant, like Fievel was. Or, you know, or for Littlefoot being, you know, not having a mother or not having, you know, parent and having to still find his own way. Because that's really the arc of Land Before Time is Littlefoot finding his own way, you know, through. It's a both, you know, a physical arc of him finding his way to Green Valley, but also a metaphorical arc as well. Along with his like four other companions, so I really do feel like when Spielberg and Bluth were together, I feel like that was when he was at his prime. But then again, you said that Anastasia was like a huge deal, so
it was.
So maybe I have to like watch it to find one more Bluth thing. And then before we leave this podcast, did you ever play the game that he created, Game Slayer or Dragon Slayer?
Yeah, of course. It's a Flash game, and it's basically animated all the way through. And you basically, it's one of those games where you have to make a decision real quick. You have to go left, right, or straight. And based off of your decision, you either die or you survive, you know?
Is it a hard game to play?
It's just a game where if you play it enough, you basically figure out where to go, and then you can beat it every time. I mean, it's just one of those games. It's entertaining. It was kind of a popular genre back in the 90s to have those games where you basically have to go left, right, or straight, and you just basically make a decision, and then it's your whatever your decision is greatly impacted by where you go.
All right. So before we go, do you have any more final thoughts on Don Bluth or The Secrets of NIMH?
Well, they're doing a remake of Secrets of NIMH. Yeah.
Do you know what company?
I'm not really sure off the top of my head. I know that I know they're developing it right now.
I'll try to look real quick. Just say some more like thoughts.
Sure. So the thing about Don Bluth is I feel like he's trying to make a comeback right now. He's actually trying to do a Dragon's Lair movie, which is pretty interesting. And I'm not really sure if it's going to be live action or if it's just going to be animated, which I would prefer it to be animated just because I'd like to see, because, you know, I did enjoy Dragon's Lair. I thought it was entertaining because the hero in Dragon's Lair is kind of a, he's kind of a putz, you know, and he's like your unconventional hero in that game. So hopefully it'll be animated.
Okay. Well, speaking of the remake, it is a live action / CG hybrid film. MGM is doing it. It doesn't say specifically who what company animation company is doing it. But it is directed by visual effects supervisor James Madigan, who's known for his effects work on the Red films, and I think he did an Insurgent movie or Divergent movie. He's a visual effects guy who's going to do it.
What I'm wondering is if the movie is going to be an adaptation of the book or the actual animated movie.
I mean, they'll still credit the novel, like based on the novel. But I don't know how true it will be. As far as the Dragon Slayer movie, I'm Googling everything as quickly as possible. It had a Kickstarter, so I guess it's an independent production.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Trying to get to it. Dragon Slayer movie remake. Come on. Are you sure what's called Dragon Slayer? The Dragon Slayer Don Bluth?
As far as I know.
Because I'm looking. Oh, it's Dragon Slayer. That's why I was having trouble. I think he's just doing an animation movie.
Yeah, I guess so.
Anyway, that'll be interesting to see him come back, especially since he's like in his 70s, almost 80s now.
Yeah, I mean, he's been working for a while, so, you know, I mean, it happens all the time. I mean, before, you know, usually before these guys die, they still try to do things. I mean, I heard Mel Brooks is trying to do one more movie before he dies.
He's doing Spaceballs 3, The Search for Spaceballs 2.
Yeah, that's great. I love it. Problem is he doesn't have John Candy or, you know, Joan Rivers, but, you know, make it work, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they made it work. No, wait, no, they didn't. They didn't make it work in Blues Brothers 2000.
Well, you can't really do that. I mean, it's, you know, it's John Belushi, you know?
Right. So, yeah, that's pretty much everything for this Don Bluth, not Don Belushi, Don Bluth / Secrets of NIMH episode. Don Bluth is a really good animation director. Please check out American Tail, All Dogs Go to Heaven, and Land Before Time, and this movie as well. and celebrate his work. He really was cranking them out in the 80s, and unfortunately in the 90s he had a little bit of a trouble. But go check his work out. It's really cool. And that is it. So, Wes, where can the good people find you?
Well, if you guys are in Atlanta and you need some video work done, I am a working filmmaker. I work all the time, pretty much. And if you need work, go to my website, www.weslwalker.com, to see my demo reel and all the work I've done. I've done work with commercials. I've done work with music videos. Also done work doing short films for people. And if you like my brand, hit me up and we'll make something happen. You know, my email is on my website. If you'd like to be entertained, you can go to my YouTube channel, which is it's Crap Films. Just look it up on YouTube. You'll find it pretty easily. And we do all kinds of really nostalgic retro stuff, comedy and movies. And hopefully you'll enjoy.
I'll put links to those in the description of this podcast. And Wes, thank you for coming on.
Yeah,
and
no problem.
You can find me at Movie Kale on Twitter, and you can follow the Twitter handle for this podcast at The Youth Critic, and then you can also follow the channel where this podcast gets distributed from at KHC Network. And thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back with you next week.
See you later.
Oh, I let you talk me into this.
It's a classic story of courage.
Why have you come?
And a world of danger.
If I had actually been near a cat, I'd be sneezing my brains out. I'm allergic to it.
Excuse me, pardon me.
Get off! Run your life! Run!
Where courage is rewarded.
Oh, thank you.
A motion picture for everyone to share.
Oh, the poor turkey fell down.
I'm not a turkey.
Big no, buzzard, where's our mother?
Get down with her. You better kill her.
Discover the secret of Nim and rediscover the child in us all.